This is Rochelle Dixon, and you've been listening to Voices from the Edge. Teresa Mitchell will be up at 9 a.m. with Press Watch. Thank you so much.
And this is KBOO Portland. It is 9 o'clock, and coming up is Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell, her weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30, it's Fight the Empire with Per Fagerang. And then Heather McCoy and the Heather McCoy Show will be coming on our way here in, let's see, at 10 o'clock. She'll be welcoming Chrissy Stroop to talk about the article, The Gospel According to Mike Pence. At 11 o'clock, it's Book Waves, and then at 11:30, it's Black Book Talk, interviews and discussions of works by African-American authors.
Did you know that KBOO podcasts all our news and talk shows?
You can find the podcast on KBOO's website, kboo.fm, on Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Just search for your favorite show and hit subscribe to get all the latest episodes downloaded to your favorite device.
Or search for KBOO on iTunes, Google Play to get all the KBOO podcasts.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly, media manipulation, and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. This week in whiteness, the Portland Police Department left a man dead on the ground 3 hours after killing him. Guess what color he was? And from Danielle Ryan, this other than corporate... interpretation of the debates. CNN's debate strategy to pit Sanders and Warren as crazies against the moderate pack fails miserably. That's the headline. She writes, the pro-corporate, pro-establishment bias that permeates CNN was on brazen display during Tuesday night's Democratic presidential debate with three status quo-loving hosts constantly targeting Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. The attack started early as Sanders wrapped up his opening statement. Establishment junkie Jake Tapper went in for the kill, kicking things off with a question about the Vermont Senator's Medicare for All bill, quoting corporate lobbyist favorite John Delaney, who had previously called the plan political suicide, and asking Sanders to respond. Sanders swatted the criticism away with an apt reminder that Americans are dying for lack of health care while the industry reaps billions of dollars in profits. Delaney, of the Dropout Delaney hashtag fame, jumped in with a useless anecdote about his father, the union electrician who happened to love his private health insurance. Unsatisfied, Tapper next tried to spark a fight between Sanders and Warren over health care, but she refused to take the bait, taking aim at, quote, giant corporations and billionaires, end quote, instead, and the two, much to CNN's dismay, didn't fight even once. There follow a list of tweets. One from Brianna, who said, respect to friends at CNN, but I don't think they did well moderating. They tried to pit candidates against each other for no reasons. And the questions really reflected a bias for the status quo. We have too many problems to treat the presidency as entertainment. Hashtag dim debate. And another wrote, going back to Danielle Ryan's commentary. Things really got fiery when Sanders dismissed Tapper's question about health care and higher taxes as a Republican talking point. Tapper shut Sanders down sharpish when he dared mention the unmentionable, CNN's big pharma advertisers. Quote, by the way, the health care industry will be advertising tonight on this program. They will be advertising tonight with that talking point, end quote. It wasn't just health care, she writes. The CNN hosts didn't even try to hide or obscure their anti-progressive agenda. They framed almost every major question to candidates in the exact same format. Sanders and Warren say this. Now please tell us why you think that their plans are bad and unworkable. Another tweet says, the ad break includes a commercial for a pill named Otezla that partially clears skin at the cost of nausea, diarrhea, and depression at a listed price of $3,400 for a 30-day supply. Anyway, back to asking candidates why they'd change our terrific healthcare system. And another tweet, let's see. Is this a tweet or not? I should use a highlighter on my text, I guess. Sorry about that. Anyway, the irony of the host framing Sanders and Warren as a pair of crazy old loonies with fairy tale plans was that they ended up giving the two progressives on stage more time than anyone else to rebut spurious attacks, which they did rather successfully while refusing to take swipes at each other. CNN's strategy was undoubtedly aimed more at Sanders than Warren, but their milder antagonism toward the Massachusetts senator was still a clear departure from NBC's kinder treatment of her during last month's debate, in which she came off as a total media darling. Pretty much every question now is directed at a candidate polling at less than 1%, and is some variation of, tell us more about why Bernie and Warren are left-wing radicals. As the lineup of establishment Democrats buttressed by corporate-sponsored CNN hosts made the case for neoliberal corporatism, Warren railed against them and managed to land one of the most memorable zingers of the night. Quote, I don't understand why anybody goes to the trouble of running for president of the United States just to talk about what we really can't do and shouldn't fight for, end quote. Host Don Lemon even took a swipe at Sanders' age, pitting him, the oldest candidate, against Pete Buttigieg, the youngest, and asking if age was something voters should consider when making their pick. Another tweet saying sarcastically, very objective and not at all politically calculated for CNN to engineer this debate as a confrontation between moderates versus progressives. She writes, CNN's war enthusiast hosts also tried to paint Sanders as an isolationist on foreign policy, comparing his promotion of diplomacy over militarism to Donald Trump's empty promises of American first during the 2016 campaign. Tendentious Tapper noted that Sanders and Trump have both said the U.S. can't be the policeman of the world, and pointedly asked Sanders why voters should believe he would be any different from Trump. Sanders shot back, quote, Trump is a pathological liar, I tell the truth, end quote. Sanders and Warren, she writes, are far from perfect on foreign policy, but the progressive pair were still the best of a bad bunch on the Detroit stage when it came to denouncing foreign adventurism, hence CNN's efforts to brand them as dangerous isolationists. When Steve Bullock sociopathically refused to rule out using nuclear weapons against another country in a preemptive strike, Warren made a passionate argument for a no-first-strike nuclear policy. And she writes, speaking of Steve Bullock, where did he come from? Did anyone even know he was running? Another tweet, this one from a Kevin, CNN owes Marianne Williamson an apology. They've done an atrocious job of including her in this debate. If she's going to be on the stage, we should hear from her at least as much as dopes like Delaney and Hickenlooper. And then Marianne Williamson would probably have offered something insightful on the topic of war had the CNN host allowed her to get a word in, but Tapper and crew were having none of her. Nonetheless, she still managed to eke out some of the night's most memorable moments. Sanders and Warren were the night's clear winners, batting away constant attacks from the CNN host and offering crowd-pleasing zingers with relative ease. But the debate was a clear reminder of how progressive Democrats are not just up against do-nothing moderates in their own party, but fighting against deeply embedded centrism and establishment defenders within mainstream media. When the also-rans start trickling away, that will be Sanders and Warren's biggest fight. That's an opinion from Danielle Ryan. Other interesting quotes from the debate were the framing of Mitch McConnell, who will doubtless lead the Senate to exonerate in any impeachment trial, as Moscow Mitch, and Joe Biden saying to a grown woman of color, go easy on me, kid. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland, news you're not supposed to know. Now turning to WSWS.org, a U.S. federal court exposes Democratic Party conspiracy against Assange and WikiLeaks. This is written by Eric London, and he writes, and this is just a part of what he writes. In a ruling published late Tuesday, Judge John Kotel of the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York delivered a devastating blow to the U.S.-led conspiracy against WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. In his ruling, Judge Kotel, a Bill Clinton nominee and a former assistant special prosecutor for the Watergate Special Prosecution Force, dismissed a civil lawsuit filed in April 2018 by the Democratic National Committee alleging WikiLeaks was civilly liable for conspiring with the Russian government to steal DNC emails and data and leak them to the public. The decision exposes the Democratic Party in a conspiracy of its own to attack free speech and cover up the crimes of U.S. imperialism and the corrupt activities of the two parties of Wall Street. Judge Koltel stated, if WikiLeaks could be held liable for publishing documents concerning the DNC's political, financial, and voter engagement strategies simply because the DNC labels them secret and trade secrets, then so could any newspaper or other media outlet. But that would impermissibly elevate a purely private privacy interest to override the First Amendment interest in the publication of matters of the highest public concern. The DNC's published internal communications allowed the American electorate to look behind the curtain of one of the two major political parties in the United States during a presidential election. This type of information is plainly of the type entitled to the strongest protection that the First Amendment offers. That's Judge Koltel's statement. Returning to Eric London's statement in article in SWS.org, the ruling exposes the illegality of the conspiracy by the U.S. government, backed by the governments of Britain, Ecuador, and Sweden, and the entire corporate media and political establishment to extradite Assange to the U.S., where he faces 170 years in federal prison on charges of espionage. The plaintiff in the civil case, the Democratic Party, has also served as Assange's chief prosecutor within the state apparatus for over a decade. During the Obama administration, Democratic Party Justice Department officials, as well as career Democratic holdovers under the Trump administration, prepared the criminal case against him. The dismissal of the civil suit exposes massive unreported conflicts of interest, as well as prosecutorial misconduct and criminal abuse of process by those involved. The criminal prosecution of Assange has nothing to do with facts and is instead aimed at punishing him for telling the truth about the war crimes committed by U.S. imperialism and its allies. The judge labeled WikiLeaks an international news organization and said Assange is a publisher, exposing the liars in the corporate press who declare that Assange is not subject to free speech protections. Judge Koltel continued in, quote, in New York Times Company versus United States, the landmark Pentagon Papers case, the Supreme Court upheld the press's right to publish information of public concern obtained from documents stolen by a third party, end quote. As a legal matter, by granting WikiLeaks' motion to dismiss, the court ruled that the DNC had not put forward a facially plausible claim. And there's much more to that article. And you can find that at WSWS.org. This is the news you're not supposed to know, so I quote that URL so that you can find it, because it will be downvoted and you will not be able to find it just by clicking around on the web. You have to remember it and enter it yourself, WSWS.org. Now here's some news from a site that is easy to find but not easy to read, because it decides that its substantial advertising income isn't sufficient, and it puts up a bar so that you can't read it without paying, and that's the Washington Post. The Greenland ice sheet, the headline goes, is in the throes of one of its greatest melting events ever recorded. The same heat dome that roasted Europe and broke national temperature records in five countries last week has shifted to Greenland, where it is causing one of the biggest melt events ever observed on the fragile ice sheet. By some measures, the ice melt is more extreme than during a benchmark record event in July 2012, according to scientists analyzing the latest data. During that event, about 98% of the ice sheet experienced some surface melting, speeding up the process of shedding ice into the ocean. The fate of Greenland's ice sheet is of critical importance to every coastal resident in the world, since Greenland is already the biggest contributor to modern-day sea level rise. The pace and extent of Greenland ice melt will help determine how high sea levels climb and how quickly. As a result of both surface melting and a lack of snow on the ice sheet this summer, this is the year Greenland is contributing the most to sea level rise. That's according to Marco Tedesco, a climate scientist at Columbia University. Now, I want to break from that text and mention also that there is... There was a U.S. Military base that was put on the Greenland ice sheet in the 60s, and the idea was to sneak a march on the Soviet Union and eventually to place ICBMs in the ice at a place where the Soviets didn't know to counterstrike. To allow this to go forward without producing a substantial smoke signature that could be detected by the satellites of the time, a nuclear reactor was put in place, and it was abandoned. It and its nuclear fuel waste was abandoned somewhere in the ice sheet. It was supposed to last forever, but due to climate change, it has been crushed and is now slowly moving. Slowly, we don't know how slowly, because there are other factors such as undermining waters, is now moving towards the ocean. This is another reason, just another reason to be concerned about. And ironically, because of the context of the global climate disaster, it's a relatively minor reason to be concerned about the melting of the Greenland ice sheet. They write in the Washington Post, to illustrate the magnitude of ice contained in Greenland, consider that if the entire ice sheet were to melt, it would raise sea levels by 23 feet. Now, I want to say something about that as well. Many of you listening to me on KBOO Portland right now, if you're listening live, you may have property that is near to the Columbia River. And if so, you should recall that the head of tide for the Columbia River, in other words, the point at which the tide no longer impacts the height of the river, is the Bonneville Dam. And we are all downstream here in Portland of the Bonneville Dam, and a 23-foot rise in sea level, which would, of course, if it happens in our lifetimes, and it very well might, not come just from the Greenland ice sheet, but from several sources, would change the topography of Portland. It would create a series of islands. This is something, if you hold property, many of you hold property that's been in your family for many, many years, that is on the north side of town. This is a time to profit from it. It's not a good investment. Not if it's close to the Columbia. Now, returning to the Washington Post article, Jason Box, a climate scientist who studies Greenland's ice sheet, examined recent field data from two locations on the ice sheet, both of which showed more ice loss so far during this event than in 2012. And speaking for myself again, 2012 was a huge event. Returning to the text, at one location 75 miles east of Nuuk, Greenland's capital, the equivalent of 8.3 feet of water had melted as of July 31st, slightly exceeding the value of 8.27 feet from 2012. At another location, 497 miles to the north, the equivalent of 7.3 feet of water had melted, topping the record of 6.3 in 2012. In an email, Box said the 2019 melt at this location is twice the average over the last decade. Again, speaking for myself, and it ain't over. Washington Post writes, the Danish Meteorological Institute tweeted that more than half the ice sheet experienced some degree of melting on Tuesday, according to a computer model simulation, which made it the highest this year by some distance. But the peak of this melt event is likely still to come Wednesday or Thursday. That would be today. Javier Fettweiss, a climate scientist at University of Liège, tweeted that a computer simulation suggests the rate of melting will reach a maximum Thursday, which could be the highest in Greenland history from 1950. Already this year, the ice sheet has endured exceptional melting. Between June 11th and 20th, the ice sheet lost the equivalent of 80 billion tons of ice. That's B, billion with a B. According to the National Snow and Ice Data Center, melting covered about 270,000 square miles, the most on record so early in the season. Temperatures leaped nearly 40 degrees above normal at the time. The current record-setting heat dome parked over the ice sheet is bringing nearly cloudless skies and temperatures up to 30 degrees above average. Skipping ahead, given the ongoing melt event, according to Tedesco, there's a very good chance we will have a record-breaking low surface mass balance. The depleted surface mass on the ice sheet is already tied to its contribution to sea level rise. And much more to the article. Find it at the Washington Post. The way I got it was to open up a new browser of a type that I don't generally use that didn't have a search history. Then I punched in a couple of news items to give it a search history. Then I went to the Washington Post and got this for free. And then, wahaha, I printed it out and read it to you now under the educational fair use, the educational section of the Fair Use Act. KBOO Portland is a 501c3 educational institution, and this information is presented free to you for educational purposes. I say that every now and then in case someone wants to bust me for using copyrighted material. You can't. The Trump administration's hostility towards climate science is not new, writes Maria Caffrey in The Guardian. Interior climate staffer Joel Clement's reassignment and the blocking of intelligence aide Rod Schoonover's climate testimony, which forced both federal employees to resign in protest, are just two of innumerable examples. These attempts to suppress climate science can manifest themselves in many ways. It starts with burying important climate reports and becomes something more insidious, like stopping climate scientists from doing their jobs. Maria Caffrey writes, in February 2019, I lost my job because I was a climate scientist in a climate-denying administration, and yet my story is no longer unique. This is why on 22nd of July, I filed a whistleblower complaint against the Trump administration. But this is not the only part of my story. I will also speak to Congress on 25th of July about my treatment and need for stronger scientific integrity protection. So this has already happened, and Maria Caffrey has spoken to Congress. And did you hear about it? I missed it. Anyway, she writes, I have worked at the National Park Service for a total of 8 years. I started out as an intern during the Bush administration, where I experienced nothing like this. I returned in 2012 after earning my PhD when the NPS funded a project I designed to provide future sea level and storm surge estimates for 118 coastal parks under different greenhouse gas emissions scenarios. This type of information is crucial in order for the NPS to adequately protect coastal parks against future effects of the climate crisis. She writes, I handed in the first draft of my scientific report in the summer of 2016, and after the standard rigorous scientific peer review process, it was ready for release in early 2017. But once the new administration came into power, publication was repeatedly delayed, with increasingly vague explanations from my supervisors. So for months, I waited and waited. I was still waiting when I went on maternity leave almost a year later in December 2017. Senior NPS, that's National Park Service officials, tried repeatedly, often aggressively, to coerce me into deleting references to the human causes of the climate crisis. It was while I was on leave that I received an email from another climate scientist at the NPS who warned me that the senior leadership was ordering changes to my report without my knowledge. They had scrubbed any mention of human causes of climate crisis. This is not normal editorial adjustment. This is climate science denial. And long story short, if you read the rest of what she wrote, She insisted on her report being printed without changes, thereby triggering retaliation against her. And she had to deal with her funding being snatched out from underneath her, and so eventually she had to leave. Now, there's a thread in all of what I've said, just about all of what I've said over the past 20 minutes, and that is the culture of corporate America. I was talking about CNN corporate culture. Talking about the Trump administration's culture, which is very much corporate culture. Corporate culture comes out of, the long and genocidal history of corporations in the United States. It is a more totalitarian version of capitalism. And it is responsible for much of the insanity in the United States. I mean that literally. I mean that people are getting treatment for the cognitive dissonance that they suffer in working for corporations where the hierarchy is so severe that people, as a matter of course, are asked to believe and act on things that are false in their face. This is one of the things that people hate about corporations. It's something that people try not to think about because it's hard to get away from. Corporate culture is poisonous. Corporate culture drives people mad. People who are soaked in corporate culture, who come out of the business schools of the United States, who get a Master of Business Administration or what have you, and who quote the pseudoscientific texts and the pseudoscience of the Chicago School of Economics, etc., have the habit of gaslighting so much that they're usually not aware that they're even doing it. And people who are subject to them, who work for them, are so used to being lied to that they don't often even realize that they're being forced to act on lies. What the boss says goes, and then you swallow it. And that literally causes ulcers, stress-related diseases, and literally madness. I would guess that a good portion of the Valium and Lorazepam and Xanax that is prescribed in this nation has to do with people trying to deal with the insanity of the complete absence of democracy in the workplace. So if your workplace is like that, then I ask you, I beg you, for the sake of yourself and for everyone around you, to look up, just go to the web right now and look up how to form a union. I remember trying to form a union in KeyCorp Mortgage Corporation, where I worked. It was what I could get in the early 1990s, and I took a job. Eventually, ended up as a mortgage verifier, which is an interesting job. And there was so much gaslighting and so much nonsense going on, and the wages were so low that I started encouraging my fellow pink collar employees to unionize. And the first response I got was shock and horror, and the second response I got was, in all seriousness, people said, "That's illegal." They believed that to be true. It is not true. It is your right to have democracy in your workplace. It is your duty to create democracy in your workplace. Join a union. Form a union. It's easier than you think. You can get help. You can get people who know what they're doing on your side immediately. As soon as you form a bargaining unit, the game changes. Look up how to form a union on the web. Easiest thing you'll ever do. I am living now on two pensions. I'm living on money that I earned starting in 1974. Money I earned all my life is now being paid out as a pension. And money that I earned working 20 years driving school buses and then municipal buses is being paid to me because the union insisted that part of our paycheck be set aside for pensioners who survive decades of working for TriMet. And I'm pretty happy with that. And my health insurance is so good that my spouse will be covered under my health insurance for 17 years at a very good health insurance for 17 years after I'm dead. And I'm proud of that. And I'm glad. It makes me feel good. This is the sort of thing you can get by forming a union. Now turning to Dar Jamal in Truth Out. He writes, "Now as the seas rise and hurricanes intensify thanks to the climate chaos fueled by events like the U.S. government invading and occupying Iraq so as to obtain and burn that country's oil, not to mention the U.S. military's gargantuan carbon footprint, how long will people," I'm summarizing, "be able to remain in Tampa, Florida, for example, until they are climate refugees? It won't take too many feet of sea level rise for much of Tampa to become unlivable." That's the tail end of a description that he makes of someone he knows who is already a two-time refugee. Skipping ahead, he says, "Suffice it to say, all of us now, if we live long enough, are likely to become climate refugees at some point, whether it be from lack of food and water, rising seas, wildfires, smoke, or extreme weather events. For many, their time as climate refugees has already begun." Again, turning from the text to my own opinion, you should invest, if you can, in filters for your house, and if you can't get that, you should invest in a good gas mask. One good location for that is Army Surplus Stores. Because the smoke may come again, it may come harder. Forest Park has burned before, could burn again. Not today, but maybe this year, maybe next year, maybe the year after that. Look after your breathing, because that's how severe the climate crisis is. "A survey of the last 30 days of scientific studies in extreme weather events," Dar Jamal writes, "shows us the driving force behind these displacements, the mounting climate crisis. An early July heat wave across Alaska found temperatures in the state literally rivaling those in Miami. Alaska saw its warmest June ever recorded, with the average temperature a stunning 5.3 degrees Fahrenheit above the normal average for that month for the entire state. That month was the 16th in a row when the average temperature in Alaska was above normal. A truly apocalyptic scene occurred in Guadalajara, one of the most heavily populated cities in Mexico, on July 1st. A freak hailstorm dumped ice pellets up to 6 feet deep in places. Cars were buried. The storm came on suddenly. Temperatures leading up to the event in the city were around 88 degrees Fahrenheit," which, speaking for myself, is rather high for Guadalajara because it has altitude. You've been listening to Press Watch. I encourage you to turn to Truth Out for the rest of that article from Dar Jamal. And right now I can see in the hallway getting ready to come in Per Fogring of Fight the Empire. So you've got more truth-telling here on your people-supported free radio station. I urge you to support KBOO and to get involved. KBOO.fm will give you details. You've been listening to us at 90.7 FM from our great big red and white Eiffel Tower on the West Hills, other frequencies elsewhere in Cascadia, and via the World Wide Web, where you can get our podcast at kboo.fm and in that manner to all the ships at sea.
At KBOO, we think that all communities deserve to be fully informed on the policies and decisions that will impact their lives, and we need your help to make that happen. We're looking for citizen journalists to help collect, report, and broadcast the news. Do you think that there are groups that are underrepresented or marginalized by the mainstream media? Are you aware of social, political, or environmental activities that don't have adequate visibility? Are there important issues in your town or region that aren't getting coverage? This is your chance to give a voice to the voiceless. You don't have to have experience, and you don't have to come into KBOO's Portland studio. You can contribute from wherever you live. If you have some basic writing skills and a desire to get the word out, we want you. Just send an email with your idea and contact information to newsdirector, that's all one word, newsdirector@kboo.fm, and include the words citizen journalist in the subject line, and the news team will contact you. Once again, send that email to newsdirector@kboo.fm.